This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by My Music Staff.
If somebody just magically came and said, listen, if you give me 500, I'm going to give you back this much, but it's going to take a year. It's going to take 18 months, but you're going to get 2,500 back. How often would you do that? You would do it nonstop, right? So that's how you have to look at those Facebook ads. It's not like I'm going to spend 500 and I got 20 customers this month from it.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
G'day everyone, it's Tim Topham here. Welcome back to Season 2 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast for 2018. You're listening to episode number 130, and a very special welcome to all my Inner Circle Piano Teaching community members. By the way, if you can hear a rumbling in the background, then that would be Bronson, my cat, purring very loudly. So apologies for that. I couldn't get him away from the recording studio. Whether this is your first time here or you've been a long time listener, thanks for choosing to spend time with me again. I'm committed to providing lots of value for you and your students and supporting your teaching and studio growth in the coming months and years ahead. If you're a long time listener and haven't yet left me a review on either iTunes or Facebook, I'd really value your support, as these reviews do have a big impact on my ability to reach more people. So just head to timtopham.com/review when you've got a spare 5 minutes to learn the easiest way to do that. Today's show notes and full transcript are available now from timtopham.com/episode130. Today we're unpacking a big topic, and we'll do our best to make it easy to understand. Today's episode is the last in our three-part series with Danny Thompson. So if you haven't listened to episode 128 or 129, please make sure you put it on your listening list. Most people are aware that the most effective and cost-effective advertising available to business owners today is online, predominantly Facebook and Google. But having success on either of these platforms can be a real challenge for music teachers, not least of all because the platforms themselves keep changing and evolving. Today, we'll unpack a few key ideas about how you can give yourself the best chance of success using Facebook advertising to find new students. Oh, and you'll get to find out what a marketing funnel is all about too. You've already met my guest in the last two episodes. He's the co-owner of the Music Factory School of Music in California. He's a drummer and podcaster. Welcome back to part three, Danny Thompson.
Right on, Tim. Awesome. I'm really happy that we've been able to do these.
Yeah, me too. Particularly given that you're about to go touring too, right, with one of your bands?
Yeah, I leave a week from today, so I'll be out for not too long, about a month. Which is pretty tolerable. Anything longer than that, it starts to get really old.
Yeah, I bet. And how does your studio go when you're off campus, so to speak? Do you have a manager? Yeah,
I have a business partner, so mm-hmm. I have a co-owner at the school. So between the two of us, we're usually able to manage. I mean, it's not easy. Certain things. You know, I'd say if I'm gone for a long period of time, we do tend to sign up a few less students. Because that's something I focus on so much at the school, and it can be tough, but in general, it runs pretty well like that. And it's nice because it affords the two of us a lot of freedom at the school. Mm. At any time, one of us can usually say, hey, I'm going to go away for 4 days with my girlfriend or something. And it's like, no problem.
Right.
Yeah. And to have, to have that kind of freedom is really amazing.
And so you don't teach one-on-one or group classes anymore?
I do no teaching other than sitting in with the band classes. So right. I'll work with those guys and I'll sit in on a teacher's lesson, but I don't do any teaching. I haven't for probably 5 or 6 years.
Right. Well, that's why you've got so many great ideas about business, because you've actually got the brain space for it, which is really important. So today we're going to be talking about one of your favorite topics, which conversely is basically everyone else's pet hate, Facebook advertising.
Yeah.
And I've heard of lots of teachers giving up on Facebook advertising after, losing money on campaigns and just never trying it again. But I know from my own business that it can actually have a great positive impact. So why does Facebook elicit such polarized views, do you think?
Well, I think it's twofold. One is Facebook, even if you're not somebody who's advertising on Facebook, has may have a distrust for the platform, especially right now. You know, like Mark Zuckerberg is in front of Congress today testifying. And what's hilarious is people were posting on Facebook about how much they hated him. And I'm going, you're using his product to tell us how much you hate the product. It's kind of silly. Right. You know, like they're not even realizing, well, where would you post your opinion if he didn't make this product for you? So I think that's a big part of it, is that people feel it's overreaching. They feel that they don't like the privacy or lack of privacy of, you know, having your feed filled with ads that, you know, you go to visit a website, you know, to look for something. You're looking for a mattress, and then you go back to Facebook and it's mattress ads, you know, and a lot of people feel that that's, you know, kind of this big brother, you know, negative thing. You know, I just have a different take on that. You don't have to use it. You could not be on social media. Nobody's forcing you to do all these things. There's a good and a bad with anything. And, you know, so I think there's that. From the business standpoint, most of the people who do Facebook ads are just doing it wrong. And so they're wasting their money. They try to do it themselves when it's a really, I mean, years ago, maybe you could do it yourself. Right now, it's so sophisticated that you really need to know what you're doing or you're going to throw the money away. And the big second part of it is if your website, when you drive an ad to your website, if the website isn't set up properly with a good landing page, you are not going to convert that customer. So it's this twofold, you know, process that has to happen. And so when somebody talks to me and shows me their ad and says, I'm running this ad, I'm getting nothing from it. A lot of times when I look at their website, I just tell them, you shouldn't be doing Facebook ads. You need to do this other thing first.
Right.
You know, so I think that's the big disconnect.
Okay. And I think Facebook likes having a correlation between, or it's vital, isn't it? Correlation between what the ad is suggesting and where you actually land. And either by people or automation, they actually check this out. So it should kind of look and feel the same, and it should deliver what the ad promises.
Yeah, I think it's very similar to how Google, you know, scrubs websites. You can't game any of this stuff. You know, years ago, you could game it, the system, a little bit.
Yeah.
Those days are over. Your website has to just legitimately deliver a quality product to people that is, you know, when they search something, Google is very, very good at delivering them on a website that is true to what they're looking for. And the user friendliness of that website is important, the speed of the website, all those things. And I believe, and you know, I'm not on the, you know, the algorithm side of Facebook any kind of expert whatsoever. You know, so what you're saying, that sounds like most likely that is what the Facebook algorithm does, but I don't really know that for sure.
No, and nobody does, of course. It's all very unknown. So what, if you had to say yes or no, is Facebook advertising worth pursuing for music teachers trying to build their studio?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Gary Vaynerchuk, and who's a digital marketing expert, and he's continually said the same thing, that Facebook ads are underpriced for what you can do with them.
Right.
10 years ago, Google AdWords was underpriced, you know, and eventually that changed. So Facebook is the best buy for the money, but I feel that you need to hire somebody to do it unless you're willing to dedicate an awful lot of time to getting good at it yourself.
And I think it's also, I would add to that and say, I think it's actually good to know how it works and have a go at doing it yourself with some guidance. And I'll talk a little bit later about a course we're actually releasing to help guide teachers in this regard, because it's much easier to hire the right person if you know what they're meant to be doing.
That's a great point. And I think that that's true with a lot of stuff that we do.
Right.
If you're going to hire a web designer, you need to know enough to be able to tell if that person is good. Same thing with Facebook ads.
So let's say a teacher listening is open to it and they have a little bit of a budget. What kind of budget would you be expecting for what kind of result? And then we'll get into where do you actually start?
Wow. That's a tough one. That's really hard to quantify. You can easily start with $5 or $10 a day, maybe one or two ads. And I think it's good to start small, obviously. The process takes time. And if there's anything I've learned from it, is you have to get it rolling and you have to leave it turned on. Mm-hmm. And you can't really expect results in the first month. So, it's a process. There's these multiple stages. So $5 or $10 a day is a doable starting point, and one to two ads tops.
Right. And that's so that you can compare the results from the two ads.
Yeah. Depending on what it is that you're trying to accomplish with the ads, there's different goals that you can set with these ads versus, are you creating a general awareness of your business, or are you trying to sign up, a specific thing for a specific date, like a summer camp? You're going to set those ads up differently with different outcomes in mind. Mm. And then there's various layers that you can add onto this to make them continually become more and more productive. So usually, with my Facebook person, we'll roll out a couple ads, and within a short period of time, you kind of can tell, okay, this one's not happening at all. Let's turn that one off.
Yep.
And there's multiple different ways of doing those ads. It's real popular now to see the Facebook ads that don't even go to a website. You click on it and it automatically fills in your name and email address in a form. And I've tried those, and not good for us, for what we do.
They're called lead ads. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll get a ton of leads. But very few of those people will ever email you back or convert into a.
Right.
So I think if you're a big company with a big budget, that could work great. If the process is taking that lead, they did click on the ad, right? So here's how you would think about that. They obviously clicked on the ad for a reason. They have some level of interest. It might be 2 years from now, though, that they do it. If you're willing to invest in that and then put them in an email campaign and you're dripping information to them over the course of 2 years, could work great. But if you want quicker conversions, that's not a good ad for you to do.
Mm. So a little while ago, you mentioned there are different outcomes for different types of ads. So you can say, I would like to get as many eyeballs on my music teaching website as possible. You could also have a different outcome, which is to tell Facebook, put this ad in front of as many people as you think will actually take an action. And so for me, that might be they register for my webinar and I use Facebook ads for that purpose. For a music teacher, it might be that they fill out a form. And so you can actually get Facebook to give you the right traffic for that amount, for that purpose. So one other mistake I think people make is that they might not choose that purpose up front the right way. And so you've got to know what your goal is. And so for many teachers, it probably is to get perhaps an inquiry or a sign up. So the question to you, Danny, as a specialist here, how does Facebook know when an action has been taken?
Well, here's the thing. When and I should clarify this, because I wouldn't consider myself a Facebook ads expert at all. I hire a Facebook ads expert.
Right.
Right. And I know just enough about what he's doing to ensure, and I know just enough about this process to make sure that I'm not losing money to somebody that doesn't know what he's doing. So that level of the process and the algorithms, I refuse to actually even take time to learn that, because I know I don't really need to. So what my ads person will do with me is show me these things on a report, and we will look at those ads. And he will outline for me, this ad here, this is what we're looking to do with this. This is a retargeting ad. These are people that we've visited your website. This ad is lower in the funnel. This ad's higher in the funnel. This is a general interest ad. Once once people have looked at this, we can later convert them into one of these ads. So we kind of approach it in that, at that process. And then we do also, we take our current email lists, put those into the ads, so we're not creating any kind of duplicate content with existing customers. So my existing customers are never seeing those ads.
Because that's a waste of money.
Right. And, yep. and things like that.
Yep. So, I mean, I've obviously, when I first started, I did all my own Facebook ads. And one of the hardest things to get your head around is the question that I asked you, which yeah. is, and it's what I think teachers should know about is something called the Facebook pixel. And that's a little bit of code that's put in your website on the page that you want them to land on after they've taken their action that will trigger the response back to Facebook to say a conversion has happened or the action has happened.
Right.
And therefore,
and I do have, we do obviously have that on the website.
Yeah, of course. But it's actually kind of cool that you don't know about it, but you're still having great success with it. What it means
well,
is
that- I know that level of what we're talking about. So I understand, you know, how that pixel relates to those things, but beyond that higher level.
Gone. me too. What I would say though, is it's important that if you do hire someone that you ask them about this pixel, they should ask you because they're going to have to get into your website code to put it in. So just make sure, because if you're not tracking the outcome of the ad, then you're wasting a whole lot of money. And I fear that that happens a lot when people boost posts because Facebook loves to offer boosting posts. Mm-hmm. Do you ever do that?
Not at all.
No, nor do I.
There was a time, I'd say maybe 2 years ago, where I actually had good results with it. But you know, it's an ever-changing landscape and Facebook is changing things all the time. Mm. So it worked really well when we first started to do Dave's Kids Rock program. We did boosted posts and it worked great. I'd always get signups from it. And then just one day I just noticed the response wasn't the same and the reach was much lower. And, you know, it was quick and easy to do a little research and realize they had kind of changed the way that that program worked. So, but I agree. What I see people doing is kind of a general approach. It's kind of like, I'm going to throw this together. I'm going to throw some money at it. And then I'm going to claim that Facebook ads don't work.
Mm. Yeah, you've got to be strategic. And I do want to come back to two words that you mentioned earlier, which people might have been wondering about. The first one you said was retargeting. So just remind us what retargeting means in the context of ads.
Yeah, well, you know, and certainly the pixel that you're talking about allows you to retarget. So somebody visits your website, doesn't convert into a customer at that point. They don't go to, you know, they don't click a buy now button or a sign up for a lesson. That pixel allows you to then place those Facebook ads into their news feed. So you're retargeting to people who have expressed an interest in your business but may not have signed up for your business.
Right.
And it's probably one of the best ways you could spend money, you know, because you're already taking away a big early portion of the buying process. These are people that have already said, hey, I'm kind of interested in what you do. Mm. But maybe there was just one little element. They weren't quite at the right point of the buying cycle to make that purchase yet, or they're shopping around or whatever it might be.
Or they got distracted or their baby cried or whatever it was. Yeah.
And I know, man, I can specifically, you know, I know of things that I have purchased or things that I've signed up for that I kept seeing in my Facebook feed for a period of time. It works. I mean, just think about yourself. That's all you got to do. And you go, oh, it totally works.
Yeah, that's
all done it.
As you say, it's when you're on Amazon and you're looking at a computer and the computer shows up in Google ads and the computer shows up in Facebook ads and that's retargeting. You are being retargeted and it is really, really powerful and I use it in my campaigns as well.
You know, I there's definitely – it's a weird thing because I actually – I like the fact that Facebook will target me with things that I'm interested in. You know, I don't want a bunch of ads of things I have no interest in. Mm. So, you know, I have things that I like. I'm interested in flying. I've been trying to get a pilot's license.
Oh, wow.
I like I ride a motorcycle. So I follow different motorcycle websites. So when these things are showing up, I'm happy to see, you know, an ad for a new documentary about a motorcycle trip that somebody did. Or, you know, that's a great way to find out about these things. And there's products that have been showing up in my newsfeed for a long time, you know, that every time I see it, I'm like, oh, I really kind of like that, you know, and then just maybe it wasn't the right time. But you know what? One day I'll be like, I'm buying it. Yep. I just got home from tour. I've got money sitting here. I'm going to buy those boots that I've been looking at for 2 years or whatever.
And that's the power of Facebook and the way they can get to the nitty gritty of everybody. The other word you use, which I want to come back to, was the word funnel. And I'm sure some piano teachers out there will have no idea what you meant by funnel. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, your marketing funnel, in Music Lesson Business Academy, in my program, I have an actual definition of funnel that I took off the internet. I can't remember exactly how they explain it, but you know, the funnel, just think about the way a funnel works. You have this big opening at the top, and that's where all the customers are. And as you enter into that funnel, it gets tighter and tighter and tighter until they come out the bottom, and that's the end goal that you're looking for. So, you know, when you have funnels on your website, it might be that they went to your piano teaching website and they put in their email address to get one free piano lesson video. So now they're in your funnel. And that's a prospect. That's somebody that had an interest in piano. They weren't ready to maybe sign up for lessons with you, but you know, they're mulling it over. So now they're in your funnel. So a week later, maybe they get another email from you with another piano video, so on and so forth over time until you're able to convert them into a customer.
Right.
And that's kind of a basic rundown of how you might use a funnel.
Now, a quick word from our sponsor, My Music Staff. Most of you have already heard about My Music Staff and how their software helps thousands of music teachers manage their businesses more efficiently. They handle all of your student management issues, scheduling, billing, and so much more. It's what I personally use in my own studio, and it's no surprise why it's the leading studio management software. What I think really makes My Music Staff stand out is its community-driven development and personal approach to customer support. It was such a pleasant surprise jumping into My Music Staff for the first time and realizing how in tune it was with my business and the ins and outs of a music studio. Since they partner with the music community to develop their software, they've been able to anticipate what teachers need and are constantly improving their software to exceed expectations. My Music Staff is super easy to get up and running. The transition away from paper and spreadsheets is painless. If you do need help, the quality of support is second to none, and you'll always get a fully personalized response. I have yet to see the level of attention and care I receive from My Music Staff provided by any other software platforms I use, and I use a lot of software in my business. So what have you got to lose? Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial today. You've mentioned email is being really important. A number of times. I use a software called Active Campaign. It's a really clever system for marketing automation, which is what this is all called. Do you have a recommendation for teachers?
I recently started using Drip.
Right.
A company called Drip, and I'm really impressed with Drip. Now, email, you know, is less effective now than it was years ago, that's for sure. Your open rates are going to be lower. But I believe that it is still an important, you know, part of your overall marketing.
Definitely.
So Drip allows you to do some really amazing things with different tags that you can put on people, and allows you to create rules and workflows so that as they're going through a campaign, you can create a rule such as if the person clicks on this link for this video, I want a different action to happen to that person now, which maybe, and that action might be moving them from the current campaign funnel that they're in to a different funnel. So there's neat little rules and workflows that you can do to try to automate as much of it as you can. The problem that we run into is that so many of the students that I sign up, it does still happen over the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to sign up people over the telephone because I know that if I get them on the phone and can talk to them, that's my best, you know, best
chance,
way
chance to
get,
convert them.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
So there's no way for my Drip email campaigns or anything to know that I've talked to this person on the phone. So then I might have to manually go in and move the customer from prospect to active or whatever the case may be. And I think for our types of business, that might always be the case to a certain extent. But I think Drip is amazing for email so far.
Yep. We'll pop links to Drip and Active Campaign in the show notes at timtopham.com/episode130. And I'll also put a link to a previous podcast episode we had with Chantelle Duffield of Studio Expansion. She had some great views on automating your studio nurturing While You're Asleep, I think we called that episode. It's exactly talking about this process of nurturing new leads with email, literally on automation, before you actually connect with them directly, perhaps by phone, or they come in for a trial lesson.
Let me ask you a question here. On a grander scale of how we market in the music lesson world, I look at it in two ways. So right now, most of my focus is on people that have really in their mind already decided that they're looking for lessons, mm-hmm. right? So mom said, I need to get piano lessons for little Johnny. They do a Google search. They're on Facebook, whatever it may be. So when they land on my page, I'm already kind of pitching to them from the standpoint of you've decided that you need piano already. Let me just tell you why you should do it with us. Mm. The other approach on a grander scale, and I think this is a much harder thing to do, is to market to people that don't know that they want piano lessons.
Yeah.
And I, you know, are we willing to take that mission on at some point? You know, because right now I'm not spending that kind of marketing budget to reach out to people who everybody who comes to me is already, they're already deciding I want lessons. I'm really just choosing between you and somebody else.
Mm. It would take a lot more work, and it would need completely different messaging. So I think that's why it would be a struggle for most people. And so you would have to direct your ad spend to landing pages directed at people, and you're now selling them on the merits of learning an instrument rather than the merits of you as a teacher for them or their child. So,
It's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. It's an interesting one, though. I mean, for people who are listening who have a thriving studio or want to build more, maybe that's a way to look if you're interested.
I think, when we sign up people for like our Kids Rock program, which is for real young kids, 4 to 7 year old kids in a band. You know, in their case, I think a lot of times maybe the parents weren't necessarily specifically looking for music lessons for their kid. They were just looking for some type of activity for their child that might be an enrichment. It could have been an art class or a dance class or something, and then they just happened to come upon this music class. Mm. So I think there's merit to the concept of trying to reach out that way. You know, I haven't figured out exactly how I would do that, what kind of budget that might, you know, I think for sure you're going to have to be willing to spend more money, you know, to do something like that. But in the big picture of marketing, that might be the level that, you know, a school that's at 1,000 students or 1,500 students, that might be more the area that they have to look at.
Mm, yep, absolutely. So just back on the Facebook ads, any tips for... I guess the four main elements that I would consider as important in Facebook advertising. One's targeting and demographics. Two is the ad image. Three, the landing page. And we've talked about the landing page. So that's the page that people, when they click on your ad, go to. And then the spend. So any thoughts on targeting first up and demographics for the kinds of people we're trying to attract?
I think that that's probably one of the toughest things to do is – you know, because if you try to target by interest in music lessons, you know, you're not going to find much. Mm. So you really have to nail down who the customer is. So a Kids Rock ad, which is band classes for kids 4 to 7 year olds. So obviously, you know, I'm going to want to target mom. So where is mom going to be? What are their interests? What are the things that they look at? So you have to kind of think outside of, you know, music lessons. You have to think a little wider. Where would I find that mom? If I was just out and about in my neighborhood, where might that mom be? She might be at a Pilates class. Most likely she's at a yoga class.
Right.
She probably is into cool coffee, probably shops for sure around our neighborhood. She's into organic food, all those kind of things that she's into. That's where I'm going to find that person.
Right.
So we have to work that into the targeting. And I think that's really hard to do, and you got to really think that stuff through.
Mm. And do you find targeting women is far more successful and value for money than targeting men, the fathers?
For us, it has been, but I think that is going to depend on the type of lessons that you do and you know,
the audience you've got.
Yeah, the audience for sure.
Yep.
If you're looking for adult guitar students, you're going to go for men.
Right.
The same time is, are those people going to be on Facebook? You have to know that information, you know?
Yeah. Or test it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about the ad image or video, I guess?
Yeah. I really enjoy video. I think video, what we're seeing in our current Facebook ads is the video ad is performing the best for sure. Very short video, real short, not like a minute long. We're talking 20-second video, which is hard because sometimes it's really hard to get your message in there.
Yes.
You know, so you got to really like nail it nice and tight. If you know, the images have to be great. And I think that's true with your website, Facebook ads, any kind of marketing you're doing, you know, just a simple picture you took on your iPhone is just not going to cut it in today's sophisticated market. And it's easy to get good images. It's not expensive. You probably have a parent at your school who's a photographer, you know, and you could trade some lessons for. And I think a quality, high quality image instantly says a lot about you.
True.
So if they go to that ad or they see that Facebook post or they're on a website and the ad is low, the image is low quality, you have to remember that what that might be saying to somebody, just like you said with the fonts.
Exactly.
That font is subconsciously saying something to somebody. That image is going to do the exact same thing.
And what do you have in your 20-second video? Is it kids playing instruments or you talking to camera?
It's for the video ad that we're running right now is primarily a kids rock video.
So it's kids rocking out in a group class.
It's actual videos of a kids rock class in the practice of the class and then at a concert.
Right.
There's background music and then I'm narrating over the top.
Great. Cool.
Yeah.
There you go. And did you find someone in your studio who did video, like you mentioned, with parents and contacts?
So for that one, Dave Simon actually has a lot of video of Kids Rock happening. So I was able to use video that he had, and then I just put different music to it and did the narration myself.
Great.
In you know, iMovie.
Oh, that's clever. Very clever.
Video is a tough one because if you're going to do a lot of video for your studio, it can be real expensive to hire somebody.
Yep.
So video is something that I will do some on my own. So I have a good DSLR camera. And it's something that I enjoy. I'm trying to learn photography. So I've bought a few cool accessories for video, got some basic lighting together. So I'll shoot video in the school and then do basic edits. And the audio side of it is easy for me.
Yeah, you know, fantastic.
For most of us, the audio is easy.
Yeah, definitely easier. And the other thing with video is that if it doesn't look good, then it's really hard to harder to convert people, I think.
It has to look good and be able to hear you.
Yeah, and the audio is going to be good too. Yeah.
So all these things, you know, five years ago, like you could put up a crappy video on YouTube and it might still get interest. Now people are making like, you know, movie quality things out of their house with the technology that's available. So if you don't keep up with that, people, I think they just bounce real quick from that kind of thing.
I just had a comment on one of my YouTube videos from 8 years ago that is really low def. Like the audio is great, but I'm kind of pixelated and fuzzy. Yeah, and someone said, "What's with the low def, whatever?" And it was great, actually. About 10 other people commented in and said, "Hey, these guys are giving you some great ideas. What's the buzz? What's the deal?" And all this kind of stuff. So that was nice to see. But 100%, like nowadays, high-quality video is definitely expected.
Yeah.
So look, let's start wrapping things up. Have you got any other comments or thoughts about Facebook ads that we haven't covered?
No, I think we're hitting – I think we're really hitting the basics. I think, again, before you look at doing it, you have to really put the effort into your website. You could do everything totally right on that Facebook ad, and it's that last final bit of where they land. And if that's not there, the whole other part of it was kind of just all for nothing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, 100% agree.
And there's this desire to find these magic bullets in marketing, you know, like, oh, I'm going to do Facebook ads. It's going to work great. I'll get all these students. All I got to do is do this little thing and it's going to work. And it's never that easy, you know? So even with me hiring somebody who, you know, does it for a living. He works for a large company, and that's what he does, is social media marketing for them. So I'm getting somebody that has a pretty good background in what they're doing. And it's still not, you know, it doesn't work day in, day out amazing. It's something that you have to quantify over a period of time. So I would say that the best thing they can do is you have to know what the lifetime value of one of your customers is worth. And a lot of people don't know that. If you know what one customer is worth to you, you know what you can spend on a Facebook ad in a month, right? And it's very easy to then do the math and say, well, even if I spend $500, if I get one customer from that one spend, does it pan out for me? And most likely it will, because that customer probably stays for 18 months or so, right? So right. How much does that equal? If that's, based on what you're charging, is that $1,500 or $2,000 in value for a $500 spend? So if you were doing it if you were spending that money some other way, and if somebody just magically came and said, listen, if you give me $500, I'm going to give you back this much, but it's going to take a year. It's going to take 18 months, but you're going to get $2,500 back. How often would you do that? You would do it nonstop.
Right.
Right. So that's how you have to look at those Facebook ads. It's not like I'm going to spend $500 and I got 20 customers this month from it. You can sign up. I've had those kind of months where I sign up 25 and 30 students, but it's a combination of $1,000 spend on Facebook, a few hundred dollars in Yelp ads, referrals that we're getting, old students coming back, it's all the channels mixed together.
Yeah.
That makes that happen.
Yep. I want to really reiterate that idea about lifetime value as well. So if you haven't ever calculated this, it's the amount you make from one student in a year times how long they'll be there for, you expect, or on average, if you've got some statistics. Mm-hmm. And whatever that figure is, if you can attract a new student to your studio for less than that figure, you're creating money for yourself.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great way to finish things up. Danny, thank you very much for that.
My pleasure.
If you are struggling with your website to create something that looks good and is functional and converts people to whatever you want them to do, then we have in our inner circle an online studio launchpad course, it's called. It literally steps you step by step through with a full PDF in color, every step you need to take, and you can watch over our shoulder as we build a studio website from scratch. So definitely check that out. And I did want to mention as well, we've got my own Facebook Ads Manager joining us for a free webinar next month, all about Facebook advertising specifically for piano teachers. And so you'll be able to watch as she shows you some examples of ads and campaigns and the all important targeting that we talked about too, that you need to be as successful as you can. And the great news is that she's actually creating a course, as I mentioned, for my Inner Circle members so that they can try setting up their own ads, get a sense of how it works, and then be better placed, in my opinion anyway, to hire their own ads manager down the track. So if you're not on my email list, well, what have you been doing? Make sure you jump on board at the bottom of my homepage and you'll be notified about that. And that's it for today. And that's it for this series. Danny, thank you so much for giving so much of your time and expertise. It's been so great to hang out with you.
My pleasure, Tim. It was a total blast.
So we'll see you again soon. Yeah. We'll see you again soon. And make sure you go and check out Danny's podcast that we've talked about and we'll be linking to in the show notes. All the best, man.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. I really hope you've gained some insight and ideas from this three-part series. It's been an absolute pleasure hanging out with Danny, and I strongly recommend that if you're interested in the business side of your studio, do check out his podcast on iTunes or just Google Music Lesson Business Academy. Make sure you also tune in to our free webinar in August this year with my own Facebook Ads Manager, explaining exactly what you need to do to blitz Facebook ads in your studio. She's spoken at some of the biggest social media marketing conferences, including Social Media Marketing World, and really knows her stuff. And she's great fun as well. So you'll be able to check that out a little bit later. We will send some information. Make sure you're on our email list. And now, also, I wanted to check, have you downloaded my app yet? It's really easy. It's available for any device at all, iPads, big, small, tablets, Androids, Googles, whatever you've got. Just head to whatever app store you use and search for Tim Space Topham. That's with a scat between the two, Tim Topham, and you'll be able to find it and download it. It's the easiest way to listen to these podcasts and keep up with all the latest videos and blog posts. Behind the scenes, we're currently working on our newest course too, Building a Music Academy. More and more teachers have been asking me for help with the tricky aspect of scaling their businesses, especially hiring teachers, actually knowing the right time to expand to new locations, and all the marketing and automation that's required for a big studio to run effectively. So we're going to be running another webinar. It's coming up in a couple of weeks' time, and I've invited Joyce Ong, the former director of Young Musicians Academy here in Australia, for a Q&A session all about these types of questions. We'll also be covering a number of ideas around productivity, goal setting, and building effective workflows. So if this sounds like the kind of help you need, you'll get lots of value from this free webinar. You'll be able to head to timtopham.com/webinar to save your seat. Okay, so next week on the podcast, we're chatting with Canberra-based teacher Philip Johnson. He's the author of books including The Dynamic Studio, The Practice Revolution, and Scales Bootcamp, just to name a few. And we're going to have an action-packed discussion around a series of piano teaching unmentionables. Some may even call them heresies. Find out what heretical ideas Philip has dreamt up by tuning in next week. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.